geek news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast,
The Ordinary Pickleball Broadcast.
Your host, Kyle Abear of the World, Steve.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 35. My name is Kyle Abear. You can hear me as the voice of Kiba on Naruto, with new episodes running Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Cartoon Network and repeats at 9 p.m. Eastern Monday through Thursday starting June 12th.
And this is your co-host, Other World Steve. I am an anime journalist and webmaster of KyleAbear.com.
This week, of course, is what everyone's talking about on the net, E3. What is going down in the video game world? What is the future of all the consoles? We've got so much scoop from Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo. We've got rants, ladies and gentlemen. We have all the specs, all the finalized stuff, because the conference has been streaming video online, courtesy of IGN. Plenty of blog action going on from journalists and websites all over the globe who have converged upon Los Angeles. Also, some news on Lindsay Lohan, who's chiming in on those Sailor Moon rumors. IGPX speeds ahead to a second season. Bernie Mac gets ready to roll out. And Monkey Punch punches his way into the U.S. again. A friend of ours, Mark, in Philadelphia, let me know that the PSP is a really cool way you could download the Big Ball Broadcast and listen to it directly on your handheld system there. Because the latest web browser update, you're able to add RSS feed channels. So you can subscribe to this podcast or any podcast directly on your PSP. Now, just a reminder, you do have to have a wireless internet connection for the download. But, you know, all you just have to do it to find our RSS feed info is go to bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. And on the top left-hand column, you're going to see a little icon that says RSS. Copy and paste that link into the RSS channel subscription on your PSP, and ta-da! The show will be delivered automatically on your PSP, and that is just badass.
Sony, speaking of the PSP, announced that they are making available a 4 GB memory card for the PSP.
Daytel or some company, I forget how they say it, but they just came out with a 4 GB hard drive that is an add-on to the PSP that retails for $200.
I don't know if I'd like an add-on, but a memory stick Duo Pro that plugs right into your PSP is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Being made by SanDisk, and Sony and SanDisk are touting up to 64 hours of MP3 music tracks, 20 or more hours of movies, videos, and film trailers, and 12 hours of game saves, or roughly 4,000 digital still images. Of course, you know, the big hairy butt coming out, expected to ship this month at just a retail price of $219.99.
Okay, well, it's not that much more than the hard drive add-on then, and that, obviously the big perk is using the card, you're not going to add any bulk to the PSP, so you can still use your cases, like that Logitech carry case that I have. It's so awesome. It's just like, yeah.
And again, the thing I asked a long time ago when Sony started talking about all these add-ons and plugins and whatnot is, how portable is your device at that point? USB cable strewn about, plugged into this device and that device. You kind of got to remain somewhat stationary to be using the device.
Not that it's ever going to threaten taking over the Sidekick as my handheld choice for chatting. So forgive us if some of our information is out of date or has changed by the time you've downloaded the show and listened, but we're just rolling with what we have as of now, and like I said, we have a lot of information to cover here. Check this out. The Sony PS3 will debut in Japan on November 11th and the following week, November 17th, in US, Europe, and Australia, and in two versions now. The bottom line version is a 20 gig hard drive, and the whole system will retail for about $500, and a more pimped out 60 gig for $600. Initial U.S. models will be black, with a hint that other colors could be released in the future. It weighs 11 pounds. It's the heaviest of the new gen systems. The controller pretty much resembles the PS2 controller, but now has motion sensors. Like, for example, in the demo of the jet fighter game Warhawk, you can angle the controller up. It actually lifts your fighter jet on screen, the nose of the plane, upward. So Sony has removed the vibration feedback feature. Boo! And they're claiming that it would have interfered with the motion sensors. Now, come on.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a developer developed this thing called the Rumble Pack function, like DualShock. Nintendo pays royalties to this company for the ability to use that technology in their controllers. Sony kind of blatantly stole the technology and does not pay royalties for their use. So Sony gets sued, and recently the terms of the lawsuit were made public, and Sony has lost the ability to use DualShock.
So Sony apparently doing a little cover-up job at E3.
Unfortunately, Sony is covering up in more ways than one, but we shall get to that briefly. I'm more interested in, why is Sony releasing two different console versions in the U.S.?
They should have learned from the 360. Those guys launched the 360 in two versions, and obviously people want the most pimped-out version, but you got to pay an extra $100 for it. Why even offer the smaller one when you're chopping off features left and right that you know you're going to want to use?
Well, let's discuss some of those chopped-off features. For one, you cannot use the controller wirelessly on the cheaper version.
Yikes.
Secondly, if you went out recently and bought a pimped out HD TV, nice big widescreen flat plasma, the cheaper version of the PS3 will not output in HD.
Yeah, that's called an HDMI output. Yeah, the 20 gig does not have that. And get this, it doesn't come with a memory stick, compact flash, or SD card port either, or Wi-Fi. So it's like, if you want all this stuff, you've got to get the more expensive version here with the front slot loading Blu-ray optical disc drive. It's got four USB ports, and the 60 gig does have Wi-Fi, the memory stick, and the compact flash and SD readers, built-in Wi-Fi, and the output for your HD monitor.
And again, the point that everybody's talking about is a price point confirmed by Sony, announced at E3, of $600.
That just hurts. you thought it was bad for Microsoft and the 360.
I mean, the one quote I've been hearing a lot recently from a lot of bloggers is that Sony certainly cares more about pushing the envelope of quote-unquote next-gen console than about its core base of gamers. And what that means for Sony is that, yes, don't get me wrong, Sony's going to sell a lot of these at launch. They probably will sell out this holiday season. But it's going to be a very select core group of gamers that are going to go out and purchase this. And the rumor on the street right now is that Sony will have no choice but to have a dramatic price drop sometime like mid to third quarter 2007.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will deny that the features on the 60 gig anyway are extremely cool, and everyone is salivating about that. But the problem is, yeah, the point, and then this whole teasing thing with offering slightly cheaper one, but it ain't that much cheaper because you're still out $500, and you haven't even got a game yet.
So what does this mean for the gaming community? Well, in a very rare and unexpected twist of fate, at E3 this year, Microsoft and Sony have teamed up, so to speak, in swaying customers towards their products and abandoning Sony. One quote from a Microsoft representative was that you could purchase a 360 and a Nintendo Wii for the same price that would cost for the souped-up PS3.
Oh, yeah. And meanwhile, Sony is still trying to pimp out the Blu-ray format. Now, the Blu-ray media disc, here's the cool part, they're region-free for the games. But movies will still be region-coded. Now, you could always turn around and say the Blu-ray specs for region coding, for the U.S. example, also includes most of Asia and South America. It just excludes China. So you'd still be able to get movies or anime, for example, from Japan on a Blu-ray disc and have it play on your player or your PS3, rather, right out of the box. You don't have to modify anything.
Unfortunately, Sony has been some problems bringing Blu-ray out to the public. Blu-ray was supposed to ship this month, and due to manufacturing issues, Sony wasn't much more clear than that. The Blu-ray's launch has been pushed back until sometime in June. I'm a skeptic, not a hater. I'm a skeptic, and I really wonder if we will see Blu-ray on shelves next month.
Yeah, HD DVD had a really, really shaky launch. Of course, it's the first generation of players, and while they have sold out, they have been limited in numbers, and they've been buggy. The units have been buggy. The extremely long load times for the movies. The movies will freeze and just get the consumers just throwing their hands up in the air and going, why did I just waste all this money?
Although they haven't announced a price point, Microsoft did announce at E3 this year that they are in fact releasing the HD DVD ROM thing that's going to connect into your 360 via USB, and it should be available soon. And the only quote they gave regarding price was that it was going to be at a bargain price. So if you really, really, really want to check out what HD has to offer, you may want to go out and buy this external HD drive to plug into the 360 instead of dropping God knows what on the standalone players.
Yeah, the standalone players, the low-end version, just for a player, is $500. Now, think about that. $500 will get you the 20-gig PS3. So you got to be really decisive here and just really weigh your options. What do you want to do if you have that kind of money to spend this holiday season? Now, a gaming system is only as good as its games, right? So Sony unveiled some noteworthy titles. Metal Gear Solid 4, Resident Evil 5, Unreal Tournament 2007, Vision Gran Turismo, Devil May Cry 4, Killzone, and Sega with Sonic the Hedgehog.
Two immediate comments leap into mind when I hear the game list. Comment number one is, back to the controller. Yes, it is a motion-sensitive controller. It's not three-dimensional, like the Wiimote, as they're calling it, the Nintendo remote control. But on the E3 floor, of the 20-some-odd games Sony is displaying at this conference, only one of those games is actually going to use this technology. Is it really a big selling point? Not at this point in the game anyways.
Regarding Sonic, didn't they have some sort of thing go wrong with that at E3 recently?
Some guys, I don't know if they actually work for IGN or not, but they were checking out the Sonic demo on the PS3 until suddenly the game froze up and then crashed the system. When they asked for technical assistance, a gentleman came over and opened up the case that was hiding the PS3 to reset the system, and that's when everybody on the floor at that time got to notice that Sony is playing these demos on the developer kits and not finalized PS3 systems.
Dun dun dun!
And a lot of people out there were saying, well, you know, that's to be expected because, you know, it's just a show to show off some of the hardware and some of the games, and nobody's really got finalized stuff on the floor. Well, that's not really the case because the 360's been out for a while, so what people are playing are real 360s, and every indication shows that what people are playing in Nintendo's section are real Wiis. So why Sony showed up with some dev kits and, you know, again, don't have the final product, I think it harkens back to their production issues regarding Blu-ray. And again, I really don't know if this is something Sony's going to be able to correct within the next 6 months or so to get this thing on the market ready for the holiday season.
Now, I'm sure the PR department at Sony were, like, just really gung-ho and thinking they were just going to floor everyone at E3, but this looks like just like a PR nightmare.
I think the largest concern for consumers right now, and this is, like, the bulk of the feedback from E3, everything that Sony's displaying right now doesn't look any better than what you're going to get on a 360. That's pretty much as far as the next-gen envelope's been pushed. So it seems right now the only thing Sony has to justify the very high price point is Blu-ray. And is Blu-ray enough for you to want to drop $600 on this system?
Exactly. It requires, you know, updating your catalog, basically. If you're going to go to Blu-ray, and I've said this on past shows, there's no point in throwing a bunch of money in a Blu-ray or HD DVD if your TV can't handle it. If you have just a regular TV and not HD, you're probably not even going to see that much of a difference.
Well, one big difference some people are going to notice are those who live in Australia. Because of, you know, the world economic market, the 20-gig version of the PSP will retail for approximately $830, where the 60-gigabyte version will retail at approximately $999.
Ouchie. So it's expensive no matter how you slice it, no matter where you live. It's uber, uber, uber expensive, and this is untested technology. Blu-ray has not been out. I mean, there's no way to gauge interest level. You know, obviously some movie studios are backing that, and a few studios are backing HD DVD. It's just another format war.
We are in no way, shape, or form Sony haters.
No.
We love the PS2. We love the PSP. Sony has been, you know, really great to its fans. It's just as far as the information we're garnishing from E3, especially in comparison with the other two console developers, It's a big black eye for Sony.
Now, moving on ahead to Microsoft, the company announced deals with Konami, Midway, Sega, and Namco to breathe new life into classic titles such as Dig Dug, Sonic the Hedgehog, and Root Beer Tapper, in which these old-school game fans can download via the 360's Live Arcade feature. Now, the live aspect will be ported over for users to access via their cell phones or other mobile devices, so that's really cool. And game-wise, the big announcement is, of course, Halo 3. Grand Theft Auto 4, because you can never have enough controversy. RPG fans will be happy to see Fable 2. And, of course, as Steve mentioned, the HD DVD player add-on that will be debuting this holiday season, price not announced.
In other Xbox Live Arcade news, first and foremost, that's really cool. Basically, what they're talking about with the Xbox Live Arcade, that's like MAME on your Xbox. So all these games, all these classic games you grew up with the arcades, you can play, you know, quarter free now on your Xbox 360.
And something the 360 download service offers that is really cool that you can't get on the regular Xbox Live is the ability to download trailers. Like, people can download the Halo 3 trailer and watch it on their HD TV if they have it, or whatever, and that's just a really cool feature.
And the really, really cool part, especially if you're a fan of Luminous, is that Microsoft announced Luminous Live, and what's really cool about that is they just announced a partnership with Warner Music Group to integrate music content into Luminous Live, and you can also download videos to play in the background, and there was a demo shown at E3 that showed a Madonna video playing in the background while somebody was playing Luminous Live. So really bringing the whole audio-visual component into gaming is something I really have to commend on Microsoft's behalf.
They've got some good things in the pipeline, and maybe they can help make up for the shaky launch of the Xbox 360.
And they actually have some really cool second-wave 360 titles. Some of those include Rockstar Games Presents Table Tennis, which is kind of weird to come from Rockstar, Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway, Fear coming to the Xbox, which is huge. You know, that was supposed to be a PC-only release, and I do own the PC version. It's an incredible game. You're really going to love it. Lord of the Rings fans can look forward to Battle for Middle-Earth. The 360 is also going to be launching Sonic the Hedgehog, as well as the new release of Madden NFL 2007. And the list just goes on and on and on. I think the one people are kind of curious about right now is Superman Returns.
Yeah, they actually got the movie cast to do the voices for it, which is impressive in itself. Moving on, the big winner for E3 so far, and I'm sure it'll be talked about even afterwards. Nintendo. Yeah. How do you know it's doing well? Well, this for example. I read online that the line for E3 attendees to even try out the Wii was rumored to be about 6 hours long, with hardly any wait times for the PS3 or the 360. Now, we've talked about the Wiimote, as it's been lovingly dubbed. It looks like a remote control. It just makes gamers have to play a little more physically. If you don't mind flailing around like you're trying to get more battery juice out of your channel changer, then this is like a new intuitive way to play games, and it's really kind of catching on. Now, for those who don't want to wave their arms around, you will be happy to know that the Wii will support the GameCube controller, and there will also be a classic controller pad offered. Another big perk for the Wii is the ability to hop online and the virtual console, where users can download classic NES, SNES, and N64 games, and some other companies have signed on too.
The really cool aspect about the download service is, while the Wii isn't considered next-gen, because Nintendo's saying, we're not out to make a next-gen system, we're just out to bring, fun games to people. The really cool about the download service is that the Wii has enough good hardware in it where it makes those downloadable games look even better. And they were showing some clips from Super Mario 64. Now, it's not going to make them look incredibly, high def and HD or whatever, but it is going to actually make them look a little bit better than their previous incarnations. Now, one minor complaint with the Wii so far is that the Wii does not support HD output, but bringing this new level to gameplay, I think, more than makes up for that.
Nintendo is definitely resting on its laurels of a classic game library, and they're even cooking up some new souped-up Wii versions of classic things, like Duck Hunt. They've got a Wii light gun controller that people have been trying out. And, of course, they've unveiled Super Smash Bros. Brawl, featuring, of course, all the classic characters. You got people from Pokemon and Kirby and on Wario, who's going to have a fart attack. You got to love that. The trailer for Super Smash Bros. Brawl even featured Solid Snake, Now, gee, I wonder who everyone's going to want to play on that game.
One concern initially with announcing that Solid Snake was in the game is that a lot of people thought the game would be unfairly skewed in its favor because of guns and explosives and rocket launchers or whatever. Mishiro Sakurai did announce at E3 that it's not really going to be that case. He may be able to use explosives all the way through, but he is going to be a good balance in comparison to the other characters. The other kind of on-the-fence thing with Super Smash Bros. Brawl is that it will not support the Wiimote whatsoever. It's strictly a hand controller game, you know, like the classic controller style. More than makes up for that, something you and I, Kyle, have been clamoring for a very, very long time is online support. So yes, you can play Super Smash Bros. Brawl online against anybody.
That is awesome.
There was a press release that came out, I believe, last week or the week before regarding the hot new Zelda title, Twilight Princess. And at the time of the press release, it said that it was going to come out on one disc that would be supported by both the GameCube and the Wii. Well, we learned at E3 that that is not going to be the case with this game. They're going to release it in two separate forms, one for the GameCube and one for the Wii. Still a little unclear as to why, but they are going on to state that, yes, the Wii does support GameCube discs.
All right, so you got any list of launch titles there?
Yeah, we're certainly looking forward to Super Smash Bros. Brawl, but unfortunately, Nintendo did state that Brawl will no longer be a launch title and will probably be released sometime in early 2007. But for launch, we're looking again at Zelda Twilight Princess coming out to the GameCube and to the Wii. I get a new Metroid game coming out. I don't recall the name of the time, but I did see some clips of that today on G4 TV, and wow, it's smoking. It looks really impressive.
How about Super Mario Galaxy?
Super Mario Galaxy, again, a very, very weird game where you can use the classic controller, but there are some aspects of the game that require the Wiimote. It kind of seems like multitasking, but when you watch the videos of the people playing it, it looks like they're just having such a fabulous time with this thing. You know, it's really being expressive and pointing the remote at the little fairy and cool stuff. Metal Gear Solid 4 is going to be on the Wii.
That's huge, and this spirals into the next big point, which is why Wii is already the big winner at E3. As of this recording, they haven't mentioned the actual retail price yet, and of course, by the time you download this, it'll probably be all over the net, whatever it is, and we'll summarize that on our next show. But as of now, the rumor is between $200 to $250 for the Wii.
Ubisoft game developers are kind of, I guess, letting the cat out of the bag, and they're saying they don't see why Nintendo would comment during E3, potentially, that the price would be somewhere closer to the 200 range than the 250. The very strong rumors coming out of Ubi's game developers right now is that Nintendo will announce a launch at $199.99.
Whatever the price is, we're pretty damn sure it's going to be cheaper than Xbox 360 or the PS3 by a long shot.
Like in a 3-to-1 type capacity.
And isn't that kind of ironic that you have a company who's backing a console who just want to make good games, who just want people to have fun. They're not trying to wow you with next-gen technology necessarily. While the Wii is steps beyond GameCube and all their systems past, they're still not trying to wow everyone with HD this and that and the other. Although there is widescreen capability. I mean, the games will display widescreen.
Nintendo's been very upfront and honest about all this. They want to make fun games for people to play. They want to appeal to the casual gamers because they know that the hardcore gamers already have their allegiances. So they want to appeal to the more casual gamers and even ex-gamers, people who have left the gaming community for a while and want a way to kind of ease their way back in. The price becomes a huge market appeal, especially to the casual gamers, people who aren't going to dedicate, you know, tons and tons and tons of money to a next-gen system. Because, again, let's be honest, if you're going to pick up a PS3 or a 360, you want it to look as good as you can, so you want the HD TV, you want to be able to hear the sound back in 5.1, you know, to really get that experience. For more casual gamers, I think a $200 price point is great. I think the coolest part about the Wii is that the game's going to launch at GameCube prices, so all these launch titles coming out, Twilight Princess and Duck Hunt and the Mario Galaxies, they're all launching at $49.99.
They're clearly going to win this war this fall. I mean, I feel very strongly about this, and I didn't think I would be saying this. If you had asked me a year ago who would win, I said, oh, Sony, PS3, easy, no problem. They're going to totally blow everyone out of the water. But we've definitely had to change our tune and alter. They've really, really come out with something that I think is just going to just blow everyone's socks off.
And the developers are echoing that sentiment as well. So much so that there's going to be a launch title from Capcom. It's a new Resident Evil game that's developed exclusively for Wii. This is a game you're not going to see on the other consoles. And to see a third-party publisher publish a game exclusively for the Wii, you know, it sounds really risky, but, you know, they know where their money's going to be at. The only thing you really say in closing from what we've witnessed from E3 so far is, yes, Nintendo's really wowed a lot of people. The buzz this year is Wii. I'm really glad they get the name out there a week before the conference so that people can get done doing all their chuckling and bashing, because you're not hearing the jokes this week. People are very positive looking at Nintendo. Kind of unexpected, you know, given the competition. But, yeah, we all the way home.
We're just looking at this realistically. But, yeah, and Microsoft, they're obviously going to pick up and dust off and have a pretty solid future with the 360. So kudos to them.
That's another huge bonus for Microsoft, because Sony's poor performance at E3 certainly boosts the prospect of somebody picking up a 360 if you want to see some next-gen graphics at an affordable price. So Sony's downfall certainly became a very, very strong point in Microsoft's corner.
Now, the only way they can really repair the damage is rethink their price point, rethink their strategy. What is the chances of that happening, really?
Analysts who are much smarter than me are predicting that Sony's going to have no choice but to cut the price down at least by mid-2007, because 2007 is going to be a very interesting time for all three companies, because come Christmas, come the holiday season, all these systems should be very well stocked on shelves, and the consumer is going to have a choice of three consoles with, you know, all the beautiful titles and whatnot. So I'm really not looking at holiday season 2006 as a barometer, but holiday season 2007 is going to pick a very clear winner.
And we welcome your feedback. You can send us your thoughts by email, or just record yourself and send an MP3 to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. And stick around. We've got more Big Ball Broadcast coming up next. Welcome to Voice Acting 101. In the last installment, I discussed agents and demo CDs. I can't stress this enough. You're investing time, energy, and of course, a lot of money in this project, so you have to be prepared. Without proper acting training, your efforts will be wasted. Seek help from a voice coach, an industry professional, or demo producer who knows the current trends in advertising and what agents are looking for. They can choose script samples that are best suited for your range, including a showcase for your signature voice. The signature voice is what your future agent will lock onto as something marketable and will help them decide what types of auditions to have you read for. It'll be the first excerpt on your demo, and it's gotta keep that agent's attention. It's gotta be something strong, something convincing, and will keep that agent from hitting stop 10 seconds in. See, their attention span is short because they get piles of demos every week, and they can only dedicate a short amount of time to listening. After all, they're in the business of covering a stable of talent they've already signed, you know, with auditions and contract negotiations. It's like appearing on American Idol. The clock is ticking, and you better be good. Okay, so, you've got your demo professionally recorded and mixed at a studio, you've got a hold of the CD master, and it's time to start making copies. Type in your city and some keywords such as talent agencies on a search engine, and you'll get an idea of how many copies you'll need to make. Call the agencies and ask about their rules for submissions. This is very important. As for the look of the CD, scribbling your name with a Sharpie isn't going to cut it. Now, there are professional duplication and packaging services out there, but they're ludicrously expensive. Inkjet direct-to-disc printers or LightScribe CD-ROM burners uses the lasers to etch the artwork directly onto the surface of the disc. Really cool. These are great ways to go, but printing out labels on your printer will work just fine. You'll need a nice, eye-catching design, nothing flashy or busy, and avoid cliches like pictures of microphones or talking cartoon lips. Simple is best. As far as packaging goes, avoid the slimline cases. Go for full-size jewel cases so you can make a label that will display your name and phone number on the front, the back, and the spine.
It's important that the info show on the spine for easy reference on the agent's desk while it's sitting in a pile. The same info should be printed on the label on the CD as well. The best way is to have someone who's already represented by an agent to walk your CD in as a personal recommendation. That can bump you up on the priority list ahead of everyone else on that large listing pile. If you don't know anyone, then you'll have to take the gamble and just drop it in the mail. There's no set amount of time on how long it'll take for an agent to get around to listening to your demo, but it's safe to assume it'll probably be a month or longer. If they're interested, they will contact you. If they're not, most agencies send a formal rejection letter or postcard. Expect to get a nice collection of these. They may already have enough talent who have the same vocal style, or they aren't accepting any new talent at this time, or you may not even hear from them at all. So, what happens if an agent is interested in you? Tune in next time for Voice Acting 101.
You're listening to the Big Ball Broadcast with Kyle Hebert and Otherworld Steve. Lindsay Lohan is addressing rumors regarding Sailor Moon. Yeah, MTV.com asked the actress about her supposed casting in the in-development live-action version. Now, she says she has received some materials from the producers of the original manga and that her fans are lobbying for her involvement. She says, quote, I haven't read the script. I don't even know if there is a script. I read a lot of things online that I don't know about myself that apparently people think are true. So, the big question is, should they even bother with a Sailor Moon live-action version? Does that have hit written all over it? And does it have a chance with Lindsay Lohan in it?
Unfortunately, a lot of the hype we've heard about anime properties coming to the big screen as live-action films have been mostly, for lack of a better word, crap. There were talks a while back about an Akira film. I don't know if it was the rumor about it being westernized that killed that project, but we haven't heard anything about it since. The highly anticipated Evangelion from ADV seems relatively dead in the water at this point, although Matt Greenfield does continue to talk it up at conventions. So I don't really know what that necessarily has to say for the future of a possible Sailor Moon flick.
Yeah, Matt Greenfield said at a con recently that Weta Workshops, the special effects house in New Zealand, actually approached ADV about Evangelion as a project. As cool as that is, Weta Workshops is not a movie studio, so I don't know where it is going with that. And Sailor Moon, as big a property as it is and has been for many years, it's obviously going to pull in all the little girls and everything, and Lindsay Lohan has had some pretty good success with that crowd. I don't know if she will continue to, because, you know, she looks like a crack addict nowadays. You know?
I think there's two things you got to keep in mind talking about this topic. And the first is, I think the reason that some of these properties are so cool is the fact that they are animated. You know, bringing it to the screen as a live action film, you compromise a bit. You kind of lose that sense of that, you know, false reality. So I'm a little scared about that. The other aspect, too, is I'm just frankly sick of people remaking properties or revisioning properties. There apparently isn't enough good ideas floating around Hollywood to make films about, so people want to grab onto whatever's hot or, you know, whatever's ingrained in pop culture and revision projects. And in a lot of cases, even though they try to take a serious approach, it comes off with a real campy feel. Because, you know, the one thing that we've debated time and time again on the podcast is comic book conversions. Movies like Spider-Man and the Hulk and whatnot, when you see them on the big screen, you go, well, that's not how it happened in the comic books. And I think the same can be said for anime, because some of these series run really long. And you have to crop this down to a 2 to 2.5 hour time frame. It comes off being kind of cheesy, kind of like the earlier Batman films.
You know, that added to Hollywood's lack of originality. They keep looking to the past. In fact, here, my next story here, the making of the live-action Transformers movie. They've just added comedian Bernie Mac to the cast, who will be supposedly playing a salesman who gives Shia LaBeouf his first Transformer. Now, I'm not really worried necessarily about who is in that more than being interested in the voice acting aspect of it. You know, if you've got Optimus Prime in it, and you got to have Optimus Prime, are you going to have the original voice? Are you going to have the original voice for any other of the Transformers that show up in this movie?
The Transformers property has been kind of weird. I'm sure it's going to look astounding. You know, I have no doubts there. You know, there's been so little information coming out. We really haven't seen any real renderings or screen tests. The casting has been fairly tight-lipped. the script really hasn't been announced or anything.
The only thing I see written about it is that it has a $100 million budget, which nowadays in Hollywood isn't all that much anymore. The cartoon is obviously very tongue-in-cheek, and it's got a very dedicated fan base who is going to scrutinize it with a fine-tooth comb. So, I don't know, is it going to be the most laughable adaptation ever, or does executive producer Michael Bay, is he going to bring something to the table that people can be proud of?
And again, that's why I plead to Hollywood, don't mess with our cool properties. You know, let us remember our childhood and how cool Transformers were, and just come up with some original content for your films.
Now, meanwhile, casting notices that are interesting. The show IGPX is speeding ahead to a second season. This comes to us from Toon Zone. Cartoon Network has renewed IGPX, or as I like to call it, NASCAR Gundam. It's a co-production between Japan's production IG and Cartoon Network and features celebrity voiceovers from Michelle Rodriguez, Haley Joel Osment, Lance Henriksen, and Mark Hamill. It will be returning to airwaves on Saturday, May 20th at 10:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific during Toonami.
And we like Mark.
We do. We like Mark a lot. And I like Lance, too. Lance Henriksen has just an amazing voice. The last animated thing I saw him do, he was, I forgot the name, but he's a gorilla in Disney's Tarzan. And he was really good in that. And Haley Joel Osment has pretty much disappeared from the live-action front and has proved to be actually a good anime voice actor. I haven't heard much of Michelle Rodriguez. I think she's from Lost, right? I haven't watched Lost. Monkey Punch is headed to Florida. Yes, to MetroCon, held in Tampa Bay. So if you're a Lupin fan, here's a chance to meet the creator. He's making a rare U.S. appearance. That is happening June 2nd through 4th. The convention also includes voice actors Scott McNeil, Greg Ayers, Johnny Young Bosch, and his band Eyeshine, Christopher Patton and his electronica band Plid, Lucy Christian, Doug Smith, Cynthia Martinez, John Swayze, Lauren Goodnight, Chris Sabat, and artist Steve Bennett. Probably some other people, too. So just check out AnimeMetro.com. And if you're in the Florida region... That's like a big con. I mean, you're going to get a lot of value out of that con, even if Monkey Punch didn't show up. But to have the Lupin guy, too, man.
And as you and I can attest, really cool guy.
I've got the first Lupin manga issue with a little sketch and a little signature inside, and it's just one of my most treasured possessions. It's just really, really awesome.
And I think that's what was really cool about him. Hopefully you guys will have the same experience out of Florida. But when Kyle and I get to meet him up in Texas, he was really generous about drawing for fans. You know, he pretty much insisted on it. He's like, no, I don't want to autograph that. Let me draw something for you. And I was really fortunate enough to come away with a Lupin and Fujiko sketch from Monkey Punch. So, again, I really hope you guys in Florida get to share that experience, because he is, like, probably one of the most fan-friendly Japanese guests I've ever encountered at a con.
That brings us to a close for episode 35. Stay tuned. Maria is going to tell you how to get in touch with the show, and we encourage that you do that, including, I should add this. Remember, you can subscribe via RSS feed on your Sony PSP. Woohoo! Now we got to figure out a way to get that on the DS.
The Opera browser is coming to the DS.
Oh!
So you will be able to download the Big Ball Broadcast on your DS soon.
Oh, sweet. Okay, that'll take care of everyone. There's no excuse. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it directly off the website. You can get email subscription. And tell your friends and family, okay? Spread the word. The Big Ball Broadcast here every week, bringing you all the geeky news that you can use. So until then, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. You can also leave a voicemail on our listener line at 818-574-3607. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky!
That was dope!